But you know, a virtual summit is so much more than a list building venture. It's your opportunity to create an extraordinary product, to align yourself with go-to experts in your field, boost your credibility, start a movement, make waves in your industry, which is my summit has put me on the map in my industry. And then you take that summit and you leverage it to grow your audience and to get more clients. So seeing it as a pure list building event is a big mistake and creates a lot of, I mean, that is why people are frustrated with summits and annoyed with summits and see them as like, I'm not even paying attention to them anymore. So I'm on a mission to change that.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 118 with the founder of Simplicity Circle, Milana Leshinsky.
This is Squadron Leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey, girls and guys, welcome back to the show. This is the Angles of Latitude podcast. I'm your host, JC Preston, and playing co-host in this session is our friend, Veronica Kieran. Hope you're having a great week. And thank you for being with us today. If this is the first time you're listening in, this is a show where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you in your own personal mission and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. So this is kind of an exciting week. I got to tell you guys, I'm going to be doing a bit more traveling, heading out to San Diego for the weekend. And unfortunately, you know, it's actually for a funeral, but since it's my first time there, while I'm out there, I hope to explore a bit. So, you know, I'll be able to finally see what the big deal is and why so many people in the industry live out there. But as you guys know, going to new places and experiencing the world is something we've talked about quite a bit in the past sessions. It really does open your eyes to new possibilities. And that's really what happened to today's guest, Milana Leshinsky. Milana is originally from Ukraine, but upon going to school here in the States, made a move to start studying computer science. And after she became a mother of two, she realized that being an IT professional wasn't all she wanted from life. You know, she wanted to be a real mom for her kids. So she started her first business and, well, she ended up realizing that dream and so much more. So in today's conversation, we'll be talking about all that she's accomplished in her nearly 20 years of being in the digital marketing space, how digital marketing has changed during that time, and why someone should do a telesummit in 2018 and what makes a good one. In today's chat, you'll find out more about why telesummits are so powerful, but one of the reasons is because it aligns you with thought leaders in your industry. And in fact, when Fizzle first started, they started with what some would call a telesummit themselves, and they called it Founder Stories. You know, it's a collection of some of today's well-known names in the digital marketing space, including Chris Ducker, Jordan Harbinger, Amy Porterfield, Jonathan Fields, and Jess Lively, amongst others. Some of the founders actually have courses within Fizzle as well, like Pat Flynn's course on affiliates or JLD's course on podcasting. And in fact, the reason why I keep bringing these two up is because they're actually two of my favorite courses that I've ever taken. Not only are the courses great, though, you know, the community in there and the weekly coaching sessions just bring so much more value that you won't necessarily get in a Facebook group. And you can get started today at Fizzle with your first month free. Sign up by April 1st by visiting newinceptions.com/fizzle. Again, that's newinceptions.com/FIZZLE. All right, that said, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes for the show. Love to hear from you guys, and I read all the new reviews on here. Show notes and show note extras of this conversation can be found at newinceptions.com/118. And as usual, I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. And welcome back to the show. Hey, everyone. JC Preston here with co-host Veronica Kieran. How you doing, Veronica?
Hey, everybody. I'm good. How are you?
Awesome. How's the awesome Grand Rapids? A little bit cold still in January.
Yeah, we keep having these mood swing weather bits here where it's 50 degrees and then 20 degrees. And so my body can no longer regulate itself, manage it. But 'tis life. It's winter.
What's new for you? Anything awesome coming up?
Yeah, well, not quite immediately, but I just rehired my speaker coach, the amazing Alexia Vernon. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking forward to her summit in Las Vegas in May. And it looks like I have pretty good reason to be out in LA for the month of May, too. So anyone hearing this who would like to get coffee in Los Angeles, I will be there for the month of May. So let me know. My information is on the website.
Good deal. Good deal. Personally, I just actually came back from going to Honduras over the weekend. Great trip. Met a lot of interesting people. Unfortunately, 2 days were spent basically in the backseat of a car as we were getting ready for a wedding. I actually was upgraded from being a backup photographer. Her sister didn't even really have photographers at her wedding, so we wanted to make sure that, you know, this one had photographers. And, well, she had four of them. So we ended up actually getting upgraded from being photographers to godparents. And that was very surprising. The original ones, they couldn't show up, and there you go. I mean, because, you know, we were married in the Catholic Church, there you go. So,
so it was a wedding and a christening?
No. A lot of times what they say when you go to the wedding in the Catholic Church, the witnesses, we co-sign on their documents that are being sent to the Catholic Church as witnesses, but a lot of times those are godparents as well. So that's what that's about. Yeah.
I understand. Yeah. So, today I learned.
So, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of different things down there. I was expecting a lot more jungle-ish type stuff, but really where we ended up going to, best way to describe it was the city was a lot like Louisville, you know, just kind of middle of nowhere. But no resorts or anything like that, but plenty of American brands. And it was interesting. But anyway, I'll be talking about this more on this week's Junto show and the group. And when this is released in the future, you guys can go check that out in the past if you miss it. But that said, today we have a guest with us that I think will bring a lot of value to the New Inceptions community. And you know, she's an entrepreneur, business strategist, and marketing mentor to all kinds of coaches, authors, and speakers. And she's the creator of Recurring Revenue Revolution, author of Coaching Millions, and the co-founder of JV Insider Circle. And having come from the Soviet Ukraine 25 years ago as a classical musician with zero knowledge of the business world, she has built her million-dollar coaching business from home, part-time, while raising her two kids. Today, we're speaking with Milana Leshinsky. Milana, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Well, thank you so much, JC. I'm doing great. JC and Veronica, it's so great to be here with you guys.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
True pleasure finally getting you on. I know it's been a while since we've been, you know, trying to find the right time. I think it was, you know, here we are. This is literally January, and we've been trying to get you on since October. So I'm glad that you're finally on with us.
Yes, we're finally here.
Woo!
So you came to the U.S. originally as a musician in 1992 at the age of 19. What brought you over? I mean, was it your parents that made the trip, or did you just have, you think more opportunity was here, or what?
Yeah, well, officially it was supposed to be a family, you know, to reunite the family because we had some family here in the States. But of course, we were excited to be here because of the economic conditions in the Soviet Union. In the late 80s, early 90s. So we were really fortunate to come here. But at 19, I think I was still a child, so I was kind of tagging along. I was married for about a year at that time, but my husband was 8 years older, and I, like all the grown-ups, just said, okay, we're going to America, and so I did.
Wow. What kind of music were you playing at the time?
By the time that I came to the States in 1992, I literally had just graduated from a music college, and my major was actually not an instrument.
Really?
I did play piano. Mm-hmm. That was my kind of secondary, because, you know, you need to play an instrument to go to music college, but I was actually specializing in theory, history, and composition. More of a theoretician, more of the other side of music, the teaching side of music, essentially, right? That was kind of my interest. And when I first came, I really did think that I was going to go to college here, learn how to be a musician in America, be a successful music teacher. But the system here was so different.
Yes.
That it just didn't work out that way.
Yeah, and even today it's like that. We had a guest a few sessions back, Edwin Culver, and you know, he's a classically trained guitarist, and you know, after he gets out of school, his like one of his first jobs is a teacher, and he was just, you know, there was no motivation in his students to really learn what he was trying to teach, even as a, you know, mid early 20 year old teacher, you know. And he just basically is like, this isn't for me, I'm gonna have to try to do this in another way. And yeah, I completely understand what you're saying there. So how long did you focus in music as your focus before you decided that something else was in your future?
Well, I started out by trying to give piano lessons, and I was charging $6 per lesson, which seemed to me like a good idea. Mm-hmm. Of course, that was not a profitable venture, but it was just trying to prove to myself that I could do piano lessons. I could give piano lessons here. And then I enrolled myself into a community college for music degree. And that was the first time ever that I got written up for discipline issues in my life.
Oh,
in my adult life, I should say, because the teacher was teaching incorrectly and I corrected her because my level of music knowledge by then was, you know, way, like, I didn't understand the idea of a community college, that kids who go to community college, they're just starting to learn all these things. Mm-hmm. And I was so beyond that I could teach the teacher. And so I pointed out that she was wrong in my broken English. I got written up for a distraction and interruption. So I was so bored. And the moment that I actually learned English, I understood that there's nothing else to learn from me here. And so I changed my major. Mm. And I enrolled myself into business administration, which later turned into computer information systems. And so I graduated with a bachelor's degree in computers.
Gotcha.
So that, you know, everything was useful. Nothing was lost. It just the path that I had to go through to get where I am today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And can definitely relate with you there. I mean, my undergrad, electrical engineering, and it was like two internships and told me that that wasn't for me anymore. In 2002, you made the leap to finally become an entrepreneur. So I'm guessing you had a little bit of IT time.
Yeah, I quit my job in 2002 as a web designer. I was making $33,000 a year. I had a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old at home. And I think I was ready to be a mom. And I was watching, waking up every day, getting my babies in the car to take them to school and to daycare. And I remember thinking, oh, I wish I could just stay like that woman who would spread the blanket in her backyard with her children, read a book, homeschool, whatever she was doing. But I was so jealous. Mm-hmm. And I felt that maternal. Finally, after my second child was born, I really felt like I'm ready to be a mom. And I don't know if you guys remember, there was a radio show very popular in those years called the Dr. Laura Schlesinger Show.
Yeah.
It really made an impact on me. I know that she was rude and mean to her guests, and she would call them names. But I was really listening, you know, and I remember these words, like, why have children and then leave them with strangers for the entire day? And I was thinking, well, what else do I do? I need to have a job. And somehow, slowly, I got into this idea that maybe I could. And I think, you know, from all the directions, I was bored at my job. I had a web design client who was a private client, and she was telling me, Milana, the reason you're not comfortable quitting your job is because you don't have anybody in your surroundings, in your family, who is an entrepreneur, who is self-employed. And that was true. Mm. Like everybody in Soviet Union, you know, used to have a 9-to-5 job. That was the way to live. There was no entrepreneurship in the 80s, probably until early 90s. And so, yeah, I was totally a 9-to-5 thinker at that time. And when I quit my job, it wasn't because I was thinking of starting a business. It was because I felt like until my daughter would go to daycare, I will stay home with her and then I'll get a job again. And what happened was very interesting. I doubled my salary within 3 years just by doing what I was doing at home. Wow. I discovered this whole internet marketing thing. I wrote 3 ebooks, started setting up websites for myself, for my clients, got into the coaching industry. And, you know, by the time my daughter was ready to go to daycare or kindergarten, she was 5, I was already making $250,000
wow.
a year. So
wow.
that plan went away and I became a businesswoman.
That's amazing. See, one of the people that I listened to and kind of started educating me was Brendan Burchard, and he really didn't start really, you know, coming on the playing field until like 2008, 2009. And here you are, you know, several years before that. Already doing
well for sure. I feel like a dinosaur sometimes when I talk to people. Yeah, 2000, I bought an ebook. It was called Make Your Knowledge Sell.
Mm-hmm.
It was by Ken Evoy in partnership with Monique Harris. I can't imagine why I remember their names, but they did teach me how to turn your knowledge into a product.
Right.
And the only knowledge I had at the time was web design. So I created my first product called Create Your First Business Website in 10 Days.
Mm.
That was my very first ebook.
Awesome.
Yeah. Made money, collected checks from ClickBank.
Uh-huh.
It was really
good.
Wow.
Had no idea that I was at the roots of the industry that's going to expand and grow.
Yeah. And even today, it's a small world, but things have changed so much. I mean, like, you know, used to be and I'm not saying that it is because you're both web designers, but, you know, I know to an extent how to design web pages, but today the hot topics is, you know, social media. That's kind of old at this point, but like, you know, Facebook ads and sales funnels and all these different things. And it's just a lot of it's the same, but it's different nuances. It's really interesting to me.
Yeah, well, the social media is huge. I remember in 2005, I held the world's first telesummit. You know, now they have evolved into virtual events, virtual summits.
Mm-hmm.
But back
mm-hmm.
then, the word telesummit didn't exist. The concept of a telesummit was, if not completely unique, then at least, you know, it wasn't, common knowledge. And so I remember looking for a way to connect people outside of a phone line. Like, how can we go online and connect with each other and chat? And I remember I found this really cumbersome plugin to add to my website where people could chat and it would constantly crash. Today, all you need is a Facebook group and you are connected. Like, how much easier is that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We really take it for granted, I think, today, how so easy it is to connect even across the world. You know, like, there's no more long distance phone call fees and conference lines. I mean, these are things very few people have to worry about anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's everything else, like with funnels and web pages that you can create in minutes, that's all about automation. That got really evolved. Where anybody could really set up a page using something like Lead Pages or WordPress. So there's really, there are very few obstacles on the way to setting up an online business. The obstacle is now different. The biggest challenge right now in the industry of selling your expertise online is that there are so many ways that you can do it. There's an overwhelming complexity that exists out there with thousands of ways, strategies, tools that you could be using, and nobody can use them all, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, how do you know what is going to work for you and what's not the right direction for you to go into?
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem I'm solving today with my company. So, yeah. can be very overwhelming.
Yeah. So with the topic of telesummits, these are in the coaching world and in the entrepreneur world in general, this is a super hot topic today. Even my own coach would say that this is the number one way to grow your list, to grow your audience. Like, you got to do a telesummit. Everyone has to do a telesummit. But speaking to someone who has seen like the concept grow and change over so many years, I feel like you have a better understanding of what it actually means to do a telesummit, why you should do it. You shouldn't just do it because, but that like there's a real time and place for it. And what makes it a good telesummit in the first place for the audience. So would you mind talking a little bit more about that? Maybe even like three pointers for making a good telesummit would be amazing.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting that the word telesummit itself could be used to describe any virtual event, but a lot of people mm-hmm. believe that a telesummit is actually a phone event. I did a survey recently and it came up as 50-50. Some people think, wow. Half the people thought that telesummit was a purely phone-based event because of the telephone. And the other half, that's how they refer to any virtual summit.
Like, so for us, we were taught, you know, this could be on Zoom, it could be on Google Events, it could, you know, it could be like all kinds of different ways these days. And so I think that there's kind of, like you're saying, maybe half of the market is starting to accept that the word telesummit is hearkening back to a different time, but it means the same thing.
Yeah, it's a bit outdated. And I actually talked to somebody and I said to her, you know, I am planning to do a program on how to do virtual events, virtual summits, telesummits. And she stopped me and said, Milana, I thought telesummits were dead. And at first I kind of got a little upset and confused, like, oh man, I really want to do this program. And then I started thinking, maybe she meant the word telesummit was dead, but virtual summits are not dead because saying that a virtual summit is dead is like saying that collaboration is dead. It's like saying that events are dead. It's like saying that people wanting to gather and learn is dead, which none of it is true, of course. But the bad summits have given this concept a bad reputation. That's what's happening. So yes, bad summits are dead, but a good summit can do so much for your business, for your brand, for your industry, for your customers. It's still, I mean, I just did research to see who is doing telesummits, who is doing virtual summits. I mean, I literally found, you know, their Raw Food International Summit, LGBT Summit, HARP Summit, Music Teacher Summit, Yoga Summit, like in every industry. And it's just touching the surface. There is a Math Teacher Summit. So, I mean, they're all over. They're just starting. And I really believe that somewhere in the next year or two, virtual summits are going to reach a tipping point where the majority of people online are going to know what a virtual summit means. And because the technology has become so advanced and so simplified, you know, simplified the entire process of running a telesummit or a virtual summit, more and more people are able to host them and participate in them.
Yeah.
Were you really big into Blab when it was out? I'm imagining you were.
Actually, I never heard of it. Is that really? Weird? No, what is Blab?
I want to say in 2015, in like early 2016, what it was is that it was kind of like a for free chat room where you could go into different, I think it was different topics, but then you would have four squares where people were, you know, just talking like they would in like Zoom or something you have to, for the most part, pay for today. But it was like, just, you could go in there and then you could, you know, just like where you have live today, you know, or in live, you can post the comments and everything and ask questions. Well, this was like the first thing to actually do that. And I mean, it was really cool because you did have four heads talking at the same time. And I mean, people were able to build audiences like crazy. But
yeah, people love these kind of, you can do that with Zoom today. And yes, you do have to pay for that platform. But the idea of having like a panel of experts and watching them, like you watch on CNN, you know, a whole bunch of experts debate a topic. Why can't you do that about marketing or about relationships or about, parenting, your health online. Mm-hmm. And so these kind of tools gave a platform for anyone to be able to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But there are some challenges with summits these days. And the biggest one is the fact that there are so many bad ones. There are so many summits that fail or fall flat. And the reason that happens is because of two misconceptions that I actually talk about a lot with people. Somewhere along the line, so let me back up. The original summit was created as a mastermind that I chose to open up to a public and charge access for it. And then I taught people how to do a summit, and somewhere along the lines, it got lost in translation. So people started teaching it and doing it as a series of interviews. And a virtual summit is not a series of interviews. Yes, you have guest experts that are invited to be interviewed, but a summit is actually a training event, an idea exchange, an opportunity to bring like-minded people together to share best practices, right? So, I saw it as an opportunity for industry experts to get to know each other, to lead conversations on important topics facing the industry. It was essentially a virtual round table open to the audience to participate and learn from. And so when summit hosts miss this important understanding that the foundational principle of how the original virtual summit was created, they end up with, quote unquote, just another summit. And, that's exactly what's giving summits a bad reputation.
Wow. So it's really more of a panel approach is what you're saying.
Absolutely. My first few summits, I had panel discussions. They were the ones that gave the entire event a kickstart. Enormous amount of energy, and that's what caused people to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning in Australia to participate live. And now people will just record interviews and upload them on Facebook or some other platform and say, today's speaker is such and such, tune in for a 60-minute interview about their life story.
Right, it's like a podcast.
Well, yes. I'm so glad you said that, because I think people really misunderstand. There's a difference between a podcast and a summit session. A summit is a training, a conference, a program. Many summits that are successful, they're actually designed as a curriculum. So that's kind of like the first misunderstanding. The other misconception that I see is people see summits as a pure list building event. Like, I'm going to do a summit because I don't have a list. And I'm going to invite all these people who they'll promote my summit and I'll build my list. Although one of the biggest benefits and outcomes of summits is the growth of your mailing list and your audience, having that as your primary goal can lead to many problems and really disappoint you with results. In fact, many people that I spoke to in the last few months, they shared their frustration and how annoyed they felt around being invited as a guest speaker on condition of having to promote the summit to their list. I would love for you to be a guest in my summit. Oh, by the way, do you have a list of 5,000 people so you can promote it? Like, people literally feel like a piece of meat.
Yeah. No, this is exactly the question I got. Like, I got asked to be in a Tele Summit maybe 2 weeks ago. But like, contingent on filling out the form, it just said like you have to have a list bigger than 5,000.
Yeah, that's the model right now. I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you have 7 years of entrepreneur experience or anything else.
I have a list greater than 5,000. It's called Facebook ads.
Right.
Ooh, I love that. But a virtual summit is so much more than a list building venture. It's your opportunity to create an extraordinary product, to align yourself with go-to experts in your field, boost your credibility, start a movement, make waves in your industry, which is, my summit has put me on the map in my industry. And then you take that summit and you leverage it to grow your audience and to get more clients. So seeing it as a pure list building event is a big mistake and creates a lot of, that is why people are frustrated with summits and annoyed with summits and see them as like, I'm not even paying attention to them anymore. So I'm on a mission to change that because I feel responsible.
Something, and you bring up a good point. Something that I've noticed a lot about recently is that people that do good content creation, when they're doing their, you know, lead in info and videos these days, they'll teach more of a message, like a actual full, I guess you could say, module versus leading up to, and if you want the rest of it, it's like that, then it's on the other side of the paywall. And I feel that, especially with webinars and telesummits, that's like, that's how you do things. I'm like, for me to hear you saying opposite and thinking that you actually, you know, treat it as something that it's whole and not as,
yeah, like module. When you go to a conference, because like I'm assuming that like the telesummit, the original concept of the telesummit was based on the idea of a conference. When you go to a conference, there are many speakers at the conference and they're all there to actually teach something. And yes, it may help their career. It may get them new people on their lists, but really they're there to teach because they love to teach, not because they're there to build their list. And you can tell the difference in their energy when they're there for that, right?
Well, absolutely.
So I'm assuming the idea of a telesummit is the same thing. It's a summit just like the summit of the UN. Like you're there because you really have something to say and to offer. And turns out, yeah, it's great for authority building, which is great for email list building, but the point is to give, not to receive.
To really teach and share your message. You're right. Like the whole summit right now, a lot of people will do the whole summit as a pitch fest, as an opportunity to pitch a product, right? Yep. And you know it's coming, and you know like their long-winded story, and you know this crappy, boring, long-winded interview that you just can't wait to end so you can get to the meat, and then they never do get to the meat, right?
Yeah.
And so that's a big mistake. Actually, I have an experience where I was running my live event as a pitch fest because that was the model at the time. I had a live event called Coaching Super Summit between 2007 and 2009. And I remember I had speakers who would get on stage. Yeah, they would teach. They would give valuable information. And then they would make an offer. And maybe 20 minutes of their presentation, they would talk about the offer. And I remember the awakening that I had when this guy from Malaysia came up to me after the event and said, listen, you should pay me to sit here, not me pay for the ticket to be this event. I traveled, you know, 20 hours from Malaysia to be here just to hear these pitches. Are you kidding me? And I was so like, this is how, haven't you ever been to an American event? This is how it's done. I was really confused because that's all I knew at the time. And so I knew that there was something wrong with the model. And unfortunately, a lot of summits, virtual summits, are done this way as well. And so, that is not a good way to grow your business because summits can do so much more. I actually interviewed somebody recently and I said, what if you had all these great speakers, but none of them were willing to promote the summit? Would you still do it? And she said, yes, of course. And I said, why? You wouldn't build a list. You would still have the same people. And she told me exactly what I was hoping to hear, because that is what my belief as well is. You do a summit for credibility, for positioning, for learning, so that you can then maybe do a second summit and show your new speakers that, hey, you mean business. You do a good job. You bring quality speakers and quality content. My very last summit that I did was in 2012, and it was called Small List, Big Money. Very topic specific. Every session was extremely strategically positioned around how do you generate income when you have a tiny list. People loved it. And I felt really good about promoting because it was so specific. Now there's summits like Break Through Your Barriers, The Achiever's Advantage. I'm like, what the heck is that? Who is that for and what is that about? It's like so generic and so fluffy. What? I call them fluffy.
Well, and see, that's one of the things that I'm like, I would rather build good relationships with, you know, a couple hundred than have multiple thousands of followers that don't even chime in.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because, like, yeah, I have so many thoughts right now that I can't even explain myself. So I'm just going to go ahead. So I'm curious. I do have a question. So, you know, with this idea of like a summit done with the essence of in mind of it being to show both authority, but also providing really good information to people who need it. Right. So are you then, what's your opinion on recording the summit? I mean, I know that the meat and the biggest benefit is being there live so you can ask questions and participate, but do you actually record the summits and provide a link to them after the fact?
You can. It really depends on your model and your strategy, on your monetization strategy. The thing is that I've had, you know, I did a lot of surveying and interviewing over the last few months in preparation for my new program on summits. And what I discovered is that people were complaining that the summits are too long. Like, who would ever sit and listen or watch 60-minute interview sessions? Or, you know, there were too many speakers and it's too overwhelming. It's like, I saw a summit, a branding summit with 80 speakers. Like, that's crazy,
wow.
Right? Because they were going for the big and bold and really elevating their business. And the truth is that these are just symptoms. People don't like long recordings, not because they're long. People don't like a lot of speakers, not because there's a lot of speakers, but because they're boring, irrelevant, fluffy, a lot of fluff in them, right? There's no essence. There's no, you know, practical information. They're all over the place. They're just a bunch of, they're truly a series of interviews. That's what people don't like. Imagine that if you are a chiropractor and you stumbled upon a chiropractor, private practice summit, you don't care how long the sessions are. If you're a chiropractor, and they're giving you useful information and they're interviewing successful chiropractors, you want to know. You want to hear them, right? Because it's relevant, it's educational, it opens your mind, opens your world full of connections. You get to innovate by listening to chiropractors from all over the country or maybe world. So it's not the length, you know, it's all about the content, which is why the very first step that I do in my program with people is let's choose a hot theme. Let's choose a theme that will allow you to attract an audience that is primed to then buy what you're selling after the summit. It's all about strategically creating that arc, of content and in a way that will attract people who are hungry for content. Hungry for learning something specific on a specific topic.
Right. And then providing actual information.
Yes. Yeah. Actual content rich, not necessarily overwhelming, but really useful.
Right. Yeah, right. That's fair.
Because we love listening to stories and success stories and the turning points, and they're inspirational. But to be honest with you, that's what I'm seeing over and over again. People do not sign up for inspirational stories. They'll be inspired, they will enjoy it, but they don't sign up for inspirational stories. They sign up for gaining new information, new knowledge. That's what people want to do when they sign up for summits.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think that's why they sign up for a lot of different people is either people are bringing stories or they're bringing like a combination of inspiration and how to. You know, and I try to be the second one for sure. So, as we're moving on here, I'm kind of curious is about the different things that you're, you know, there's a number of things that you said that you're involved in the pre-show, and you said that one of the things is that you're still after all this successful businesses that you've had over the time, you're still actually involved with the arts. And what I heard is that at age 39, you began ballroom dancing. And then also in 2016, after you left your seven-figure business at the time, you started writing music. And I'm kind of interested about, like, you know, the different things that you've been doing art-wise.
Yeah. A little over a year ago, I basically said goodbye to my previous business, which was at the peak of its development financially. So people were very confused why I would walk away. But I had to do that, you know, multiple reasons. One day I just woke up and I said I wasn't interested anymore in being part of that business. I just signed the agreement. I sold my half to my business partner and walked away. And I woke up the next morning and I sat in the armchair and I was lost. I was always on the go, 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 launch, program, event, delivery, launch, program, delivery, event, a team running, membership. Oh my God, constantly creating, launching, running something. And suddenly all of that stopped. Like there was nothing. Empty.
Yeah.
Quiet.
Oh man.
At first, of course, I hated it because I was like, can I be an entrepreneur without a business? Because I still felt like an entrepreneur. I just didn't have a business.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right?
I think so.
And so I started coming up with a new business idea right away. I needed a new business right away. So I started calling people like, what business should I start? Tell me, tell me, tell me. I called my coach, my old coach, and I said, you know me really well. Tell me, what are all my gifts and talents? What should I do now? And then I spoke to a friend who said, why don't you take a little bit of time off? Because you literally just walked away from a business that you burnt out from. Maybe you just need more time. Mm-hmm. And I followed that advice, and I gave myself 1 week, which was definitely, it didn't seem like enough. But... Mm-hmm. It gave me enough of that quiet time where I stopped searching. And then maybe the next week I started researching a little bit, but I still wasn't in a rush. Like I was still honoring this idea of space and time. And I started playing piano again, and I wrote a piece of music. And although I've always written music or composed music before, I have never actually recorded it with multiple instruments professionally arranged. And there is a person that came into my life at that time. His name is David DiGiorgio, and he is a Broadway composer, like super talented guy. So he liked that piece of music and he arranged it for me. And I ended up recording it in a studio locally. And it's now sitting on my website, absolutely beautiful. And I think if it weren't for me quitting that business, this beauty would have never been born. Nobody would have ever heard of that. So it's sitting on my website at milana.com under music. I've always wanted to have a music tab. So far, it's the only one that actually recorded, but you know, I continue to compose and write. There is life beyond and outside business. And I think that that's what I started seeing, is that when I reached $1 million in my previous business, I thought it would feel like $1 million, but it didn't. I thought the heavens would part, the angels would sing, the rainbow would appear in the sky, and none of that happened. I didn't even notice that I made $1 million until a few months later my accountant told me, yeah, you hit seven figures in October. I was like, really? Oh. Wow. Should I celebrate? No, I'm too busy.
Oh, my God.
So the holy grail of all these businesses, all these, especially online, internet marketing companies, the holy grail is $1 million. But I will tell you that once you reach that level, unless you have something else behind it, like a purpose, your big why, something meaningful that you're passionate about, none of that money matters. And when I say that to people, they'll laugh and they'll say, "Yeah, let me find out for myself."
I want to actually bring up a book that I've been reading during my trip over to Honduras. It's called Meaningful Work: A Quest to Do Great Business, Find Your Calling, and Feed Your Soul, and it's by Sean and Lauren Askenazi. And Sean had been a really great attorney, criminal and civil, and he just got, like you, got burnt out, and he found himself, I think, in his, you know, late 40s, early 50s, like, what do I do? And he just started like a chocolate business with his daughter. And that the chocolate business, it gives people happiness through chocolate, because he had previously started baking and people liked, you know, his goods. But what's awesome is that he sources all of his cocoa from developing countries that, you know, the farmers, you know, can give him this real, these really great tastes that no one else has. And so he's able to help them and back and forth. And it's really interesting that you're saying what you're saying, because it's going along exactly with what he's talking about in the book. So good stuff.
So Milana, what are you currently starting to work on that has you excited about your future, the future of your work or even in your personal life?
I'm starting to see that I don't need a 5-year plan.
Oh, that's great.
I used to always like to know, where am I going with this? Yes, I'm creating this right now, but where am I taking it in 5 years? It seemed like it made sense, right? Like every solid business needs a plan, needs a vision for the next 5 years. And there has never been a time where I actually had a 5-year plan and it came to fruition. It always changed. It always evolved. Mm-hmm. I've always reacted and responded to different things that would happen along the way. And so I stopped stressing out about a plan of what my business is going to look like in 5 years. And I'm focused more on really now. And now I'm excited about teaching people how to do virtual summits the right way. Now I am excited about running my company called Simplicity Circle. And I have a free Facebook group called Simplicity Circle, you know, for people who are really looking to grow and scale without all the complexity, without all that overwhelm in growing a business, without the cost of independence, peace of mind, health, relationships, whatever it takes to run a successful business. So I would say these are the two things that are on my mind today. What's going to happen in the future? I'm open to seeing where it takes me, and being open to these opportunities is exciting to me, as opposed to, you know, creating a very rigid plan to follow. And that is one of my biggest transformations that I experienced over the last 18 months, is like, it's okay. It's okay that I don't know what my future business will look like in 5 years, because I'm happy now with what I'm doing, and that's all that matters.
That's wonderful.
Amazing. We always end the conversation with a rapid fire question segment. And really, we're going to give you the questions rapidly, but you can go into detail in answering them as much as you want to. And we might even join in the conversation. So that being said, are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's see how fast I can think.
Who are 3 influencers or teachers that have launched you to where you're at today?
How about 2? I'm going to give you 2.
All right, okay. 2.
My mom, who came to America at 39 and became a senior computer programmer by the age of 47, by learning English in her 40s and getting a new profession as a computer programmer. So she's totally my role model and influence. And although she's not entrepreneurial, she totally supports me and just reminds me to make sure I have food in the refrigerator, regardless of what I'm doing in my business. And the second person, I would say Seth Godin. I absolutely love his thinking, his books. Unleashing the Idea Virus is the book I was reading while developing one of my very first businesses, Assessment Generator, where he was teaching that creating a great product that can be like a viral product, or that's why the book is Unleashing the Idea Virus. It needs to, the product needs to have marketing built into it. That's exactly what Facebook has done, because you can't use Facebook without other people. That's exactly what Harmony.com has done. You can't use Harmony.com without having told other people what you're doing and that you're looking, and, you know, things like that. So those 2 people have really influenced me.
Awesome. What are the 3 books that you tell everybody about?
Fiction or nonfiction?
Well, it could be either. You mentioned Make Your Knowledge Sell, but I don't know if that's, like, you know, very present of mind for you today.
It's always present of mind, yeah. Unleashing the Idea Virus is definitely one of them. There's a book that I consider like a desktop book. It's called Get Unstuck and Get Going. It's a very unique book by a Canadian author, Michael Bongay-Stanier. And when you open it, each page is split into three sections. Literally, you can flip the top section, the middle section, or the bottom section to come up. So, you know, you think of a challenge in your mind, whatever you're feeling stuck, and then you read a story or a quote or an idea in whatever page you look at, whatever page you're looking at, and it's supposed to help you get unstuck and think creatively and innovatively. I love it. I bring it with me to every retreat that I lead with my clients, and if somebody is feeling stuck, I hand them the book and I say, okay, open to any page and read it. What does that mean to you and how does it apply to your challenge? It's magical. So that's probably so cool. One of my other books. I do want to mention a fiction book because I surprised myself. You know, when you go to a new country and you change languages, you actually don't, it's easy for you to lose the passion for reading. And that's what happened to me. So, you know, I read all my childhood, all my teenage years, and then I came here and suddenly I was no longer interested in Russian books, but I was not yet ready to read English books. And the one book that I actually read from cover to cover several times is called The Pillars of the Earth. And if my daughter is listening at the door right now, she's probably laughing because I tell everybody about my passion for this book. It's about a 12th century cathedral building and all the stories of all the people that are involved in that story. Absolutely, incredibly well written by Ken Follett.
Wow.
Cool. And these will be in the show notes as usual. So awesome. In the last several years, what's something that you've become good at saying no to? I mean, were there any realizations that helped you do that?
If it doesn't fit into my lifestyle, if it doesn't make my heart sing, if it doesn't align with my natural abilities that I'm already aware of, I usually say no.
Awesome.
Things that I really wanted to highlight today for sure.
And I totally agree with that. And because of what I see myself as becoming, it's getting easier to see that. And I think a lot of people, when they're first starting out, it's a little difficult, but
a lot of people try to do everything when they first start. And I mean, it's easy to do that too, because you're so excited that you started something that you want to just take it all, just do everything. I want to do everything. It's so much fun, but that's how you burn out. And then you start to realize it's not passion based if it's everything.
Yeah. And that's why we need groups like Milana's, because I mean, so simplicity is so
there
key.
You go.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What is your least favorite social custom? I'm asking this because I'm interested to see if you have insight into, you know, the cross-cultural experience.
I don't know if it's my least favorite, but I found it annoying lately because it's different from how Americans do things. Mm-hmm. In my family, when we gather together, we usually sit at a table and all the food is on the table and you have to reach for it. And kind of like, it's such a big deal to organize a family party. Because you have to cook all these dishes and put them on the table where everybody can reach. And sometimes you take a big dish and you separate it into, you know, multiple dishes. Like, it's just a big undertaking. That's why I don't like being a hostess. However, recently I went to a party, which reminded me why I don't like the Russian style party and I love the American style party. And that is the buffet style, where you just set out a table of all the things and people just come up to it with their plate and take it and then sit anywhere, not necessarily at the table together, where then it's impossible to get out if you need to go to the bathroom. Or if you're just ready to leave the table. So,
right.
So much easier.
Or you want to talk to somebody different.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you. It's so always such a big deal. Where are you sitting? Who's next to you? Like, oh my God.
I'm next to Uncle Joe.
No. Yes. For like the next 2.5 hours, you're stuck with Uncle Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dirty Uncle Joe.
And the final question, what's the secret to achieving personal freedom?
Yeah, I thought of that as you were asking me, you know, saying no. Actually, my answer was going to be learning to say no to things that don't feel right to you, that don't align to you know, with you. So I'm going to expand on that. You know, we are surrounded by people who always tell us what we should do based on their experience, based on their skills and their journey in life. So when somebody tells you, you know what you should do this because it really is the fastest, the easiest way to achieve success. The truth is that, you know, they are saying it based on their experience and their life story. And you have no idea what their journey has been like. Maybe they have to travel 200 days a year. Maybe they ended up in a, you know, divorcing their spouse. Maybe they experienced some serious health issues. You really don't know what they had to go through to achieve what it is they're telling you. So their advice comes from a place of their own personality, lifestyle goals, their own skills and passions. My coach years ago told me, Milana, you know what you should do? You should really start traveling around all these coaching events and start talking about your book. Yeah. And I thought to myself, you know what? That is so not me. I have a 2 and a 6-year-old at home. I doubt that I even could travel if I wanted to. But now looking back, like, I didn't even want it to. So I fired my coach. But I think the secret is really to listen to your inner voice, inner guidance. Some people will call it God. Some people will call it, you know, your inner coach. I call it my inner voice, my inner guide. And, you know, using your own filter, like a simplicity filter, does it align with what you believe you should be doing? Does it feel exciting to you? Does it make your soul sing? And if not, the answer is no. Not allowing other people influence you so much that you are taken off track. And then a few years later, realize that you built the wrong business. I have a lot of clients like that who just built the wrong business because somebody they saw and were inspired by told them that that works.
That's happened to me a couple times.
So that's really the definition of simplicity, is following your own inner voice, inner guidance, using your own filter to making decisions and deciding which marketing strategies to use and what kind of business you want to build. Because if you build the wrong kind of business, there is no way you're achieving your personal freedom.
It's no way.
Somebody it's else's personal else's. Freedom. Exactly. Right?
Yeah, totally. So as we're wrapping up today, what are some steps that all of our listeners could take to get involved with Simplicity Summits?
Oh, I like how you called it, Simplicity Summits. Well, first of all, if you are generally curious about the whole idea of simplicity and simplicity-driven entrepreneurship, definitely go to simplicitycircle.com and get a copy of my free book. It's called The Simplicity Principle, where I talk about what's in the way of building a simplicity-driven business and how to get rid of complexity. And you're even going to get a free business assessment to tell you how much complexity you currently have in your business. And find me on Facebook. Just search for a Facebook group called Simplicity Circle and join. I would love to have you. And as awesome. a result of being in that community, you will see me talk about summits too. I guess I should have brought that together.
Okay. Understood.
Well, Milana, thank you so much for joining us today. Finally got it done and definitely learned a lot about the right way of doing a telesummit. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Bye.
Bye. So there you have it, gang. Big thanks to Milana for joining us in this session. I love meeting these folks who have, you know, been in the business for as long as she has. Now, if you know your history, not just like history, but history of your industry, it can be much easier to predict the future and see the trends. And I think that's why she does as well as she has. I mean, she just has lots of experience. And today's show note extras, which again can be found at newinceptions.com/118, I have a few videos of Milana's from her YouTube channel. In the first one, she's doing a Q&A for people who wanted to know more about virtual summits and telesummits. And since that's what we talked about in detail in this session, I figured that'd be something you guys would want to check out. Next up, we have a video called Discover the Fastest Path to Go to Expert, which I'm sure that a lot of us really want to know more about. And in the third one, she speaks with guest Michelle Copper about making good marketing videos in 2018. And finally, I'll post a video she put out this week where she's talking to a guy by the name of Jeremy DeMerchant, and their conversation is about sales and coaching. And when I was first starting my business back in 2010, 2011, this is one of the reasons that I never really got far into coaching. I always felt it was awkward bringing up my pricing. And after that, I soon got started America Multisport. And during my time with them, working there day to day, I later learned that, coaching was going to be something that I offered at a premium to special clients. But thing is, if all you want to do is coaching or you're not a natural born salesperson, then you definitely should check out that video as well. So in the next session, session 119, Harrison will be back on with me as we talk to one of my favorite podcast hosts, Michael O'Neill from the Solopreneur Hour podcast. And in this particular chat, Michael brought he brought a lot of tips that I think will help out any podcaster get better at their craft. And he approaches podcasting like it's a radio show. And there are some things I truly learned that you'll hear me starting to implement in the show in the not too distant future. So our chat with Michael won't be one that you want to miss. Real, real good stuff coming in that one. So stay tuned for it coming out in a couple of weeks. So that's it for session 118. Remember, you can get a special free month of membership from Fizzle if you join by April 1st. Simply visit newinceptions.com/Fizzle to get in on that offer. So that said, thanks for joining Veronica, Moana, and myself today. And until next session, gang, dig in, have fun, and take care in whatever you're creating. And we'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.